Today, good news is bad news again as rates push higher. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news, and this is our weekly market update. Once again, good news is indeed bad news, as overall the US economy looks stronger than expected. And the US Economic Surprise Index, kept by Citi, which tracks how much incoming data is exceeding or lagging expectations, jumped to its highest in more than 2 years. But, of course, this leads to the thought that rates will have to go higher for longer, forcing markets lower. Shares closed lower in New York on Friday, reversing earlier gains in light volume. And while the June job data helped to ease some of the concerns about the interest rate outlook, it also did provide further justification for a July increase. The US economy added jobs at a slower than anticipated pace in June, but conditions remained largely tight as Federal Reserve officials prepared for an upcoming interest rate decision later in the month. On Thursday, far stronger than expected ADP data on private sector employment sparked bets anew that the Reserve Bank may not slow its monetary tightening pace as inflation proves to be more persistent. It came in at almost double expectations, suggesting an extra 500,000 jobs were created last month. This triggered a Treasury yield spike to levels last seen in 2007. Although note that the ADP data often differs from the government's official private sector employment report. So, the Labour Department's closely watched employment report on Friday showed that non-farm payroll rose by 209,000 last month, cooling from a downwardly revised mark of 306,000 in May. Economists had expected figures to increase by around 225,000. And meanwhile, monthly growth in average hourly earnings remained unchanged at 0.4%, while the unemployment rate decelerated slightly to 3.6 from 3.7%. The US labour market's resilience did bolster the case for rate rises. A quarter point increase is viewed as pretty much assured now, later this month, although economists are divided on whether that will mean a peak has been reached or whether there is still more to come. For example, today's report supports our view that the incoming data will not meet the bar for the Fed to deliver a hike in September, Morgan Stanley said in the note. Markets are assuming a roughly 90% probability of a 25 basis point hike in July, up from less than 70% last week, Oxford Economics said. The ISM non-manufacturing survey of supply managers suggested the services sector was in stronger shape than thought, which of course is unwelcome if the aim is to slow the economy and bring inflation down with it. But the proportion of purchasing managers in both services and manufacturing who are complaining about the prices they have to pay have slid. Those surveys were a great leading indicator that an inflation wave lay ahead, and they're now suggesting that pricing pressures really are being tamed, at least to some extent. But a rate hike is now more than fully priced in by the September meeting, and the peak effective Fed funds rate has risen above 5.4%, with markets pricing in a roughly 45% probability of a second rate hike by the November meeting, Oxford also said, adding that the first FOMC rate cut is no longer fully priced in until July 2024. Certainly, Fed policymakers have pointed to a loosening in the tight jobs market as a major objective of its recent year-long campaign of rate rises aimed at dealing with elevated inflation. The FOMC voted to keep borrowing costs steady at the last meeting, although the move was seen just as a temporary measure to give officials more time to assess the impact of the increases on the broader economy. A minutes from the Fed's June gathering, along with comments from Dallas Fed President Laurie Logan on Thursday, underscored the central bank may be about to restart its rate hiking cycle. And Chicago Fed President Austin Gusby said he does not disagree with his fellow U.S. central bankers that rates will need to rise a couple more times this year to beat back too high inflation. The yield on the US 10-year note edged 0.43% higher to 4.073 in New York, and the 2-year yield was at 4.95%. It surged as high as 5.12% the previous session, when the private jobs data I mentioned earlier far exceeded expectations, though that data has somewhat been dismissed as misleading today. Since the 21st century officially started at the beginning of 2001, that was only about the 65th day when the 2-year Treasury yield had traded above 5%. So this is unusual. It means that a spike earlier in this year can't be taken as the high of the cycle, and that can't be ignored. Fascinating two-day moves in the US yield curve that sees a notable moderation of the 2-10s inversion, Mohammed Al-Aren said in a tweet. As to what to make of it, part of it is some reduction in hard landing concerns, and part is being on the receiving end of two market segments trying to find their footing in the midst of considerable data fluidity. While the 2-year was the most eye-catching and passed a round number, note that there were breakouts across the bond universe more broadly. The real 10-year yield is at its highest since the tail end of the GFC in 2009, and German bond yields had their biggest daily rise since the banking crisis back in March. And in fact, with the exception of a few days immediately before that, the 10-year bond yield is at its highest since 2011. And UK gilts have stabilised above the level reached during the Liz Truss crisis last October, at their highest since 2008. The UK 10-year gilt was last at 4.6915. But it could be that traders are now developing cold feet, having taken yields to those extraordinary heights. Investors are more cautious going into a very important week, with the beginning of earnings season and a very important inflation reading midweek, said Quincy Crosby, chief global strategist at LPL Financial. So on Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.55% to 33,734. The S&P 500 lost 0.29% to 4,398. And the Nasdaq Composite dropped 0.13% to 13,660. Among the S&P 500 sectors, defensive groups fell the most, with consumer staples down 1.3%, energy gained to 2.1%, while materials rose 0.9%. The small cap Russell 2000 ended up 1.2% on the day. Major indices ended with weekly losses after a strong first half of the year. For the week, the S&P 500 fell about 1.2%, the Dow slid roughly 2%, and the Nasdaq dropped 0.9%. In company news, Levi Strauss shares tumbled 7.7% after the denim clothing maker cut its annual profit forecast. The company cut its guidance on adjusted diluted EPS for 2023 to the range of $1.10 to $1.20 from $1.30 to $1.40, and it now expects revenue to grow between 1.5% and 2.5% from 1.5% and 3% previously. Shares of Rivian Automotive surged 14.2% after Wedbush upgraded its price target on the EV maker to $30 from $25 amid further confidence in Rivian hitting or exceeding its delivery targets ahead of the second half 23 and 2024, with an inflection year ahead. The upgrade comes just days after the company reported it delivered 12,640 vehicles in the second quarter, beating market estimates. And US-listed shares of Alibaba gained 8% after Chinese authorities said they will impose a $984 million fine on Ant Group, ending the affiliate fintech company's year-long regulatory overhaul. Defensive concerns of the market, including consumer staples and utilities, were indeed the biggest losers on the day, with the latter dragged lower by Walmart and Costco. Costco reported on Thursday that comparable sales for June fell by 1.4%. As the broader market ended the week in the red, the inflation report due next Wednesday is likely to dominate investor attention, as it's the last major release before the Fed's meeting on July 25th, 26th. Morgan Stanley says it expects core CPI to slow to 0.27% in June amid a significant drop in core inflation, particularly in goods, driven by vehicles. Inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index CPI grew 4% year-on-year in May, slowing from a 40-year high of 9.1% in June 2022. But of course, core inflation remains horribly sticky. Now, over in Europe, European shares eked out gains on Friday as data pointing to slowing US jobs growth eased concerns about interest rate hikes by the Federal Reserve, but it did little to change the main Stoxx 600 index's worst weekly showing in almost 4 months. The Stoxx 600 rose 0.1%, turning positive midway through the session after that data from the US. European equities took a hit this week, though, as hawkish messages from central bankers pushed up yields and drove investors to believe rates will remain high for longer, and as bleak economic readings from the Eurozone and China fed concerns of a global slowdown. The DAX closed up 0.48%, French CAC 40 rose 0.42%, and the UK FTSE fell 0.32% as home prices fell again last month. That's for a third straight month. Top loser on the Stoxx 600 was OSB Group, which plunged 28.8% to hit its lowest since November 2020 after the British lender flagged up to £180 billion hit as customers refinanced their mortgages earlier than forecast. The Stoxx 600 fell 3.1% for the week, its worst performance since mid-March. And earlier in the day, German industrial production fell 0.2% in May. Compared with the previous month, analysts had predicted that the output would only stagnate in May. Gold, though, isn't about to lose its $1,900 US mark yet, not with the US labour market that finally may be cooling. The front month August gold contract on COMEX settled at $1,930 an ounce, up 0.79% on the day. For the week, the benchmark gold futures contract was virtually flat. Friday's high of $1,940 for August gold compared with its three-month bottom last week at $1,900. Oil bulls are finally getting a break on rate hike concerns after a softer-than-expected US jobs report for June suggested some tempering in the Fed's hawkishness, with the central bank's policymakers ready to set their next review in 3 weeks or so. Also holding sentiment was a weekly report on US oil inventories published on Thursday that showed across-the-board draws for crude and fuel. US crude hit a one-month high, with New York WTI reaching nearly $74, the first time since June the 5th, with an intraday high of $73.91 a barrel. The US crude benchmark settled up 2.66% to $73.69. And London-based Brent settled up 2.16% at $78.17 after a one-month high of $78.53. For the week, WTI was up 4.6%, adding to the previous week's gain of 2.1%. Brent rose 4.8% on the week after the prior week's 1.4%. Most Asian stocks fell sharply on Friday, extending losses from the prior session as signs of a robust US labour market drove up concerns over interest rates, and that's of course before the non-farm payroll data came out. Regional markets took a weak lead in from Wall Street, with US stocks logging steep overnight losses on Thursday after data showed that the private payrolls grew far more than expected in June. Technology-heavy Asian markets were among the worst performers on the day, with Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index and South Korea's KOSPI down 0.9% and 1.66% respectively. The KOSPI was also pressured by losses in Samsung after the conglomerate flagged a sharp decline in its second quarter earnings on weakness in global chip demand. Samsung's shares sank 2.2%, with losses spilling into other chip-making stocks. Broader Asian markets also retreated amid fears that rising interest rates will limit capital inflows in the region. Japan's Nikkei 225 fell 1.17%, while the Topix shed 0.4%, as both indices continued to retreat from recent 33-year highs. Japan's Advantest Corp shed 0.9%, while chipmaker SK Hynix dropped 1.4%. Rising interest rates spurred weakness in tech stocks, of course, by diminishing the appeal of future returns from the sector, as government debt begins to offer similar and safer returns. China's Shanghai Composite Index fell 0.28%, as a string of weak economic readings over the past week dampened the outlook for Asia's largest economy. Concerns over China weighed on Australia's ASX 200 as well, which we'll also look at shortly. Indian stocks were the best performers in Asia for the week, with the benchmark Nifty 50 index hitting a series of consecutive record highs this week and up 1.6% for the week, largely outperforming losses in their Asian peers and based on increased optimism over the Indian economy. Now in Australia, shares sunk to their third straight day of losses, with a three-week low on Friday as investors worried that hot US jobs data will force the Federal Reserve to lift interest rates again on July the 26th. On Friday, the S&P ASX 200 index dropped 1.69% to 7,042 points. That's the lowest close since March the 28th, when it closed at 7,034. For the week, it finished down 2.2%. The best performing share market sector was utilities, which finished down 0.7%, and the worst performing sectors were interest rate sensitive tech, real estate, and consumer discretionary sectors, which finished down 2.2%, 2.6%, and 2.4% respectively. The worst stock on the benchmark index was Afterpay owner Block, which lost 5.5% to $96.32, with sprawling investment group Pinnacle Investments down 5% to $9.26 after its trading update missed expectations. Among the blue chips, miner BHP Group dropped 1.8% to $42.20, with CBA losing 1.7% to $98.73, and Wes Farmers off 3% to $47.09. Local bond traders moved to price increase expectations of an imminent rate increase from the Reserve Bank, with Australian two-year government bond yields up to 4.421%. That's the highest since 2011. And Australian 10-year bond yields up 10 basis points to 4.281%. That's the highest in more than a decade. The ASX 30 interest rate futures is pushing rates higher for longer, which of course is not good for mortgage holders. And the Aussie was at 66.90 against the US dollar and 52.13 against the English pound. And on Friday, UBS said it remained bullish on the lithium sector due to structural tailwinds, including the shift to electric vehicles, with West Australian lithium producer IGO its preferred pick. IGO was last at 1506. And in cryptoland, Bitcoin continued to knock around $30,000 with little reason to go anywhere for now, a topic that we're going to explore in our upcoming live show with Adam Stokes on Tuesday. And finally, key events next week include policy meetings by the Reserve Bank of New Zealand and the Bank of Canada, a Wednesday speech by the RBA Governor Philip Lowe, and the release of the June CPI data in the US late on Wednesday Australian time. But the takeout from this week is higher interest rates for longer. The bond markets are definitely signaling it. And if this is true, markets, equity markets in particular, are massively overvalued. So more uncertainty ahead, and of course more pressure on consumers, because those higher rates will translate to higher mortgage rates. And it's worth reflecting again just how much of the economy in Australia and in the US are driven by consumer behavior. If consumers do dry up, then of course markets will drop, and drop quite a long way. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.